My wife and I lived on the, we were right on the Shenandoah River, and we live in West Virginia now, just 10 minutes from where we were before in Virginia. But we lived in Virginia, right on the Shenandoah River, and there was a creek that fed into the river, and it was wonderful that it had this waterfall. It was a beautiful place to go, and the river was always full of wildness and crazy noise and people nearly dying and cops running around. It was just a wild thing. But the creek was kind of like the secret area, and I loved to go over there, especially when something was on my mind, you could hang out. But I went there, and this poem is written from this, when I went in like, I can't remember if it was late winter, early spring, and I just decided to get in the water. And I took all my clothes off, set my boots, and just swam around. And then I noticed these buzzards started circling with me, with my white winter body. You know, they thought, it's not long for this guy. So they came close too. And I was eventually laying on a rock, and I noticed that all of them, and I don't know if this is true for all vultures, but they were flying directly between my eyes and the sun, so that their shadow was crossing my eyes, I think to see if I would react. And this poem is that reaction, I think. This is called Naked Sunlit Afternoon with Vultures. The charismatic bodies of the dead draw them down, quietly, imperceptible from the circle in the sky, to the sycamore trees, and the roadside we see every day decked in the common gore our speed leaves behind for these birds to pick at slowly, who strut and stutter primitive things, hungry to eat and be glutted by death. Oh, Byzantine black angels, always smelling at the aftermath of a sad fact. Today, in the very middle of one beautiful afternoon, you watched me strip down to boots and wander a deep creek's boulders, water falling everywhere. And in the blue sky, descended to the near trees as I splashed, sank, swam, and then spread out on a rock with lichen stuck to my body. As one by one you passed exactly between me and the sun, so your shadows touched my body quickly as I guessed you looked for some living reflex or reaction, and did so then receive one as I waved and called you all near, wondering if perhaps one brave, starved member of your community, too zonked on sunlight to wait for my death, would come at me. And the idea of wrestling you to the ground and breaking you apart in my arms was wonderful, as meanwhile all eight of you settled in the near trees, scritching anxious in the branches, while I breathed the air my winter body shared with your dark wings. And so on this beautiful day, too full of the sun's bright clarity and the joy of swimming naked, and too full of late April's mosses and buds bursting on the mussel trees, your eerie, hard leering was part of the promise I have made to Kathleen and my family and the dearly beloved friends I live to delight here in these long letters, to never kill myself or anyone else or a thing now moving quiet suddenly under love's low wheel. I have told this story before, but recently there was a deer dead on the road where I work. And where I live is now what I think was rural is now being destroyed, basically, by people who build houses and live in them for a year and then move out and just tear up the land. And they all have Lexuses and stuff. So this dead deer was in the road, and I was driving to work. And these vultures didn't want to get out of the way either. They were just walking around. They were the king of it all. And these Lexuses were kind of piled up behind the scene. So when I got by them, I went, hey, we're on the same team, I think. But what's next? I'm going to read something. I love this poem because it's so inappropriate. And I love it because it's an erotic poem, and I'm a man at a podium in an academic building, and I'm going to read this erotic poem. And I think that it's absurd. That fact is absurd, and I love that. And I know that a couple people were warned away, or may have been warned away, from coming to the reading because of this poem. And it's not that bad, but it is pretty bad, in a good way. And actually, one of those people I noticed did come, who I thought may not have come. In it, all there is to know is there's a speaker, and the lover of the speaker, and the lover of the speaker is walking one of the latitudinal lines of the globe on her way to bed. It's called the Latitudes of Desire. I need a drink of water before this one. But Frank O'Hara once said that poetry has to be at least as good as the movies. And there are things wrong with that statement, but there's a lot right with it too. And I think that we need to include in our poems the things in our lives. And another writer, Nicholson Baker, said that life is too short for writers not to write with the utmost candor. And I love that. And it's a good reminder for me. It's called The Latitudes of Desire. She walks into the room wearing only her blue panties. And I love how the word panties ends on a teasing slide, as if the sheer glide of the silk were now between my teeth, and the sounds of knees and pleas relieve the quick pant and lace of her walking in, almost completely naked, as I lie very completely naked on the bed and watch as she walks into the room with only her blue panties between her and me, and the world drinks a Coke while she walks the thin line of the 39th parallel that runs through our bedroom like a tightrope and extends eastward as she takes the long way to my waiting arms through Baltimore, where Edgar Poe broke a rib trying to suck his own cock on a sunny late April afternoon. And she walks across the Atlantic in her blue silk panties, and the water heaves and rises and wets her feet a little as the walking days pass like frigates and barges loaded with bananas. And she strolls through the Azores, tickling the mustache of a stranger with her fingertip. And in Lisbon, her breasts red from the voyaging sun inspire young painters who hunger suddenly for the rich, seedy meats of fresh tomatoes. And she walks toward me the long way in her blue panties, like the Aphroditic dream I have married. And oh, the walk is long, and she walks across ferry boats of the Mediterranean in her blue panties, and her gold hair shines as she crosses the moonscapes of central Turkey, where no one lives, and talks to the goats, bearded and horned as I am by now. And the goats look up at her as she moves through northern Iran, and maybe one eye of one goat watches her disappear over the horizon, and it takes forever as her blue panties still cling to her hips, and the taut lines of the silk stretch and move as she walks beside the fishermen, reaching out to her and touching their cocks as they fish the Caspian and bob in their boats. And the bed rocks slightly, and adrift I watch her step into the sudden heat of Samarkand's late evening streets, full of baskets, merchants, and children racing by as her blue panties shine in the sun. And this can't last too much longer, I tell her, while she moves patiently, quietly, through all of China, crossing the wall, clamoring easily, graceful through the prairie grass emperors filled their mattresses with, and would now trade everything they once had to merely graze her blue panties and her ass with their hands. But she is coming my way through Pyongyang now, her arms working slowly, relaxed by her side, her belly full of the kind of bright butterflies mine is, and which fly round her head in northern Japan, where this butterfly is exclusive, exquisite, and one lands on her eyelash as she heads into the great blue Pacific Ocean, whose salt I can smell, already impatient to pull her blue panties down. And my body can't wait any longer, but waits in a kind of tremble as she re-enters America through the clean streets of Sacramento, where all the jugglers drop their chainsaws, their apples, and watch as I watch this beautiful woman pinch her nipples occasionally, slowly, or run one finger in the slowest stroke of luck Nevada never dreamed of, as she moves closer to me, and her blue panties are like the sky about to fall, as she goes right over Pike's Peak and waves to me, and I can feel her breath on my neck as Kansas City suffers the warmest breeze it ever knew. And men nearly come on the street as she passes, walking home to me these few thousand steps across the prairies and the rivers of our room this evening. In April, in the Blue Ridge Mountains, wildly in bloom with bluebells, violets, and irises, all of which now glow somewhere in the world, like Kathleen's silk panties lying on the floor in the dark, lying there in the dark. The natural next poem is a poem that I wrote when my wife and I were trying to have a baby, and we did. Her name is Isabella, and I thought I might write something to encourage the process, or to help the process along. So I did. And it seems to have worked, so I'm going to read it. It's called To One Lingering in the Trees. And by the way, a beauty bush is I don't know if anyone knows what a beauty bush is, but we have one in our yard, and it's a very ugly tree 11 months out of the year. It looks dead. It's scraggly, and nothing's on it. And people say you should cut that down. But then 1 month, it just blooms, and these millions of tiny little pink blooms. It's gorgeous. To one lingering in the trees. The beauty bush that never blooms waves in the yard, and gods of all kinds die every year of loneliness, wandering down into mountain valleys to look at themselves in the Shenandoah or the Amazon, and it's clear to all of us that you are not yet here. Who knew we could need one more mouth to feed and to listen to and to love? Lingerer, come on. Your mother and I have already started to embarrass you, making love every day. Every day this spring we have called to you in the body's way. Of calling that is careful and gentle, we have invented three new ways. Come on, creature sprawled in the high, still trees of the jungle heaven must be. Wake up and swing down to us. Come on, I will buy you a seersucker suit. Your mother will keep your favorite cigars in a mason jar. And I will help sometimes to encourage you when you mow the yard. It is only 3/4 acre, but we have 29 redbud trees, wild raspberries. And today I planted the rooty burlap of a hemlock in the yard. If you are homesick and need to climb the high branches and look at the world from some distance and remove, both of which we all need sometimes. I've written these lines to tempt you. And your mother says she loves you. And it is true, her eyes send light so warm and clear. The sunlight you know and are used to, you will find shining here when she looks at you. Look, she is making a sandwich with peanut butter and bananas. It is delicious. You'll love it. Come on. That's a new poem. It's not in the book. Two more. Y'all doing all right? Because when I was a student here, I love poetry, but a little goes a long way for me. And when I was a student, I would sit in the backs of readings. And when the guy up here or the woman up here would chat like this between poems, I would say, shut up, read the poem. So I hear you. This poem I wrote for an occasion that never occurred. It was a celebration of music where I live in Percival, Virginia, and it never happened, and I was asked to write it, and I never got to read it. So I like to read it, and I'm going to. But it reminds me partly of poetry readings. This is written to an audience. It's called, For the 8th Annual Celebration of St. Cecilia, the Patron Saint of Music, Percival, Virginia, November 1999. In the golden spruce front of a violin, there in the alternating lines of dark and light, like sometimes the rain or rays of the sun fall down, you can see, as you can hear, all you ever knew once shimmer and disappear. As the violinist plays, and what he plays is all you know, and all you have, for the long little while he plays. And he plays so magnificently, the men and women in the crowd beside you disappear with you, by astonishingly sweet degrees. And the years pass, and your best suit crumbles. Your teeth plink to the floor as timber by timber the roof caves in. Snow blows through, and centuries later wolf packs roam the wreckage of folding chairs and carry your white bones to the new hills of ice growing outside what was once Percival, Virginia. And when I think of music so great, no passage of time could ever kill it, I think of some future day, far away I hope, when a mouse pulls some brown grass through the hole it gnawed in the very last violin lying somewhere, half smashed in the charred ruins of the shiny ancient cities of Cleveland or Sacramento. And when I think of that future day, far away I hope, I think of the golden spruce face of a violin being played well right now, somewhere on the planet. Maybe on a mountain in Colorado, or a concert hall in Havana, or along the coast of Nigeria in a fishing boat, or here, where I listen now, for the cello joining in, and the flute joining in with the violin. This is my final poem, and I want to thank you all again for being here, and thank you all for having me. It has been a delight, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow doing a workshop, and it's so nice for me when I'm not around people all the time who read and write. It's so nice to come to a place like this where it seems everyone is. But everyone is. I wasn't when I was sitting back there often. But anyway, thank you again for having me. This final poem I wrote, I actually wrote it after the book was accepted, partly thinking of my heroes and asking myself, who are my heroes and why? And one person came to mind. And I think I've had a slow understanding of what she did. I always thought that what she had done was an act of ordinary courage. And I was mistaken. I think that what she did was an act of extraordinary courage. This is a poem to her. It's called Ode to Rosa Parks. In the forests of Alabama, where pine trees crowd the air and scrape the blue sky raw, and heat sifts down a few degrees, where green moss creeps on stones and crawls over the earth, I will bet all I ever loved that just below the surface here, you will find the bones of men smashed by roots, and the gray rinds of the skulls of women broken open like sudden storms, one at a time, over the brutal southern course of years. And you could populate 3 or 4 medium-sized towns with the bodies lost in the forests outside Montgomery, Alabama. And 45 years of clear, starry nights have passed over these pines since that afternoon in December 1955, when you risked the sudden rage of whites who mobbed up at a moment's notice. And the midnight cruelties of Alabama were practiced so well, so often, that the smallest act of defiance was a matter of life and death. And you did not move to the back of the bus as you were told to. And it was dangerous, always dangerous, to have any courage in the South, just to open your mouth or to breathe in and out. And you did not move to the back of that bus on Cleveland Avenue, secretary of an Alabama chapter of the NAACP, Lady Courageous Rosa Parks, sitting in that seat you saved us, the difficult, sweet word, free. Thank you all.